Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Nun Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins in the middle of Daf Nun Gimel. If you prefer, you can count 22 lines from the top. You will notice a crown marking, highlighting the name Chizkiah, and a few lines later, the name Rabbi Yochanan. On the side of our Gemara, you will notice a Nosei/Mivneh, Nosei topic heading, Mivneh structural note, where this form is featured, the crown. We note Chizkiah/Rabbi Yochanan, these are the names that we're going to highlight. Hezek She'eno Nikker, the topic under discussion has to do with damage that's not noticeable. This, of course, is a theme that we discussed in our previous year when we dealt with actual examples of medamea, mixing of truma into someone's chulin, metame, defiling other people's foods. We're going to see here a machlokes ma dino devar Torah, midoraisa. What is the din on a Torah level? The double underlining that you see will highlight the term Devar Torah. Chizkiah will tell us, Shmei Hezek, that even though it's not noticeable, the Torah nevertheless obligates someone to compensate the victim if he was damaged in a Hezek She'eno Nikker fashion. Or I should say, even in a Hezek She'eno Nikker fashion. Obviously, if it's a visible damage, that one is certainly obligated to compensate for on a total level. Rabbi Yochanan says, Lav Shmei Hezek, since it's not noticeable, it's not categorized on a total level as something that one is obligated to compensate for. Now the Gemara. Omar Chizkiah, Devar Torah, Echod Shoging Vechod Mezid Chayov. On a total level, whether it's an unintentional or intentional act, one is chayev to compensate. My taimo, hezek she'eno nikur shmei hezek. My taimo means what's the reason that there is an obligation to compensate, and I dare say even on an unintentional shogeg level. When it comes to something that's categorized as damage, we don't make distinctions between intentional versus unintentional. That has relevance when you're dealing with sins, but when dealing with financial tort law, there is no distinction. And since Chizkiah considers it hezek, so even if it's unintentional, that you unintentionally defiled someone's produce, you will have to compensate. Umatam amru b'shogeg poter. Why then on a rabbinic level do the rabbis say that if you damage someone unintentionally in an hezek she'eno nikker fashion, is one actually exempt? Answer, Kedei Shiodio, so that the offender will be motivated to inform the victim that it happened, that your stuff became tome, that I defiled your stuff, or I mixed truma into your chulin. Ihachi afilu b'mezid. Now, if our purpose is to encourage someone to disclose what he had done, so even if he was intentional, we should say he's exempt, so that will motivate him to disclose it. The Gemara says, Hashta la'ozoke komechavin odoy lo modale. The person's intention is to damage, to cause him pain, so to speak, that his stuff is now defiled, is now ruined. And his whole purpose is to cause the person a feeling of loss. You don't think he's going to inform him? You don't, obviously he's going to inform him, otherwise how's the fellow going to know? So that you don't need to exempt him from payment in order to motivate him to inform him. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan, our Devar Torah, Echad Shogeg v'Echad Meizid Potter. Why? Why is there exemption? My time on Hezek Sheno Nikar Lo Shmei Hezek. It's not considered damage. Umatam Omru B'Meizid Chayav. Why do we then impose the payment upon someone who does it when you're telling me the Torah itself would exempt him? Answer, Shelo Yehei, call Echad V'Echad Holech U'Metamei Taroysav Shel Chaveru V'Yomer Potrani. So as to discourage people from going and intentionally defiling other people's produce and taking comfort in that they are exempt. So as to prevent wildfire or defilement, we say, look, if you're going to do it, you're going to have to pay. Even though the Torah wouldn't expect him to pay. Now we have a new marking, and under the Mivneh, the structural note, we indicate Kushios al Hamanda Omar. These are going to be questions on the opinion Hezek Sheno Nikar Shmei Hezek, namely on Chizkiah. Tanan, Hakayanim Shepiglu Bamikdosh Mizidim Chayovim Vitoni Allah Vipnei Tikuna Oilam. The Tanaic source says that Kohanim who are Mefagel, Piglu, that has to do with people, with Kohanim who process sacrifices with wrongful intention. We're not going to get into the details of what constitutes pigul, but it has to do with wrongful intention. It's certainly a hezek she'eino nikar. You can't see it. It's a matter of how the sacrifice was processed vis-a-vis intention. And if they do so premeditated, willingly, so they will have to compensate because that causes the korban to be unacceptable. And we're taught that the obligation is for the preservation of world order. In other words, not something that is letter of the law. Ve'i amres hezek sheinu nikar shmei hezek. And if that were the case, that like Chizkiah says that hezek sheinu nikar is considered actual damage, the text should have been Shoygigin Pturin Mipnei Tikkun Olam Midvayaleh. If you want to speak about something that's Tikkun Olam, so then exemption would be the thing that ought to be taught. To suggest, like Chizkiah says, that Hezek Sheino Nikar is considered actual Nezek, and then why do you associate the obligation to pay with Tikkun Olam? An exemption to pay would be more aptly described as tikkun ha'olam. Tikkun ha'olam meaning something that's a rabbinic ruling as opposed to letter of the law. The Gemara says, Hochi nami komar. Now we're answering in defense of Chizkiah. Mezidim chayovim. The source taught that if the Kohanim are mefagel b'mezid, they're chayov, and then you would infer from that, ha shoygigin pturim. If it were done b'shogeg, if the kohen had a wrongful intention but didn't realize there was anything sinful about that, the kohen would be potter mipnei tikkun ha'olam. Rashi says on the line right under the Gemara text, ha shogeg b'turim, demasnisen lo toni shogeg b'turim behedya b'resha. The Mishnah there didn't teach explicitly an exemption for shogeg. Vinami toni Tikkun ha'olam lo arei shekoi, and that which it teaches that there's a teaching of a tikkun ha'olam in a separate source, that is not a reference to mezid. It's rather a reference to shogeg. Just to remind you, when we say shogegim turin mipnei tikkun ha'olam, the reason we'll exempt them is so that the Kohanim will inform the owner that, you know, the Korban that I processed for you, I did so with a wrongful intention, and the Korban shall not be accepted. The Gemara continues. Mosiv Rebbe Elazar. Ha'oise melocha b'mei chatas b'boras chatas, poter p'midine odom, v'chayov p'dine shomayim. One who uses the mei chatas, that's the water that's prepared for purification of people that have been defiled to the dead. It's the water that's mixed with the ashes of the Parah Aduma, the red heifer. Likewise with the Parah Schatas itself, one who, let's say, rides the back of a red heifer, he uses it for some type of malacha. So using the water or the cow itself, it ruins it. It cannot be used for purification purposes. What does the offender pay? Well, if he's exempt on a Torah on a Torah level, that's Potter Medine Adam, from terrestrial courts, he is exempt. However, from heaven's standpoint, he has to compensate. V'yamris mezek sheno nikush mehezek, if you're going to say like Chizkiah that unrecognizable damage is nevertheless considered damage, b'dinei adam nami l'chayv, should be obligated on a terrestrial basis, on an earthly court, to pay, to offer financial compensation for having ruined the mei chatas or the paras chatas. So this is Rebbe Lozer's question on Chizkiah. Hu moisiv lo v'hu mefarek lo. He raised the question, and he also answers the question. Pora, in the case of the Pora Duma, so we're going to tell you that, like Chizkiah, Hesek Shenu Nikr is real damage. Why then is he Potter Medine Adam? Because in the case of the Pora, Sheikh Nisa Lurvoka Amenas Shetinak Vitidosh. The owner of the Parah Aduma put it into the Revoka. This is Rashi says, the Mokum Asifa Sebehemus Vikishuran Kemo Kegle Marbek. Where Marbek, having the same Resh, Beis, Kuf, Shoresh, root, has to do with the gathering together of animals and tying them. Kedei Shetinak, Rashi says, as he must, that it shall nurse, it shall suckle, v'tidosh, v'tvua imshar, imashar. And when it's tied together, it'll also trample some grains, trample or crush, thresh grains. The tashlumin leko amaisi odov, to say that he's obligated to compensate because of what he did, domar, he can answer, the owner will answer, l'toiva ichnistia, Shetinak. I put it there. I put the Parah Aduma, tied it with the other animals for its own benefit, so that it should suckle. Upsula lohavi elamachmas machshavosayish niskavinav shetidosh. The animal's ruination is only because of his thinking that the animal also do something. Will do malach. It will thresh. Ugroma benezikin potter. When it comes to causative damage as opposed to proactive frontal damage, that is not reason. Even in full-fledged damage, in obvious damage, there is exemption. For a damage that results from mere thought, we don't hold people responsible. The psula machmas machshavahu kidomar. The disqualification in this particular example is only because of the thinking. The tying of the animal, the action that he did of tying the animal together with the others, that action in and of itself can be explained for the animal's benefit. That wasn't a function of malacha. That was for the animal to suckle. Its disqualification is something that's purely mind-based, and therefore there is exemption because of groma benezikin. We continue in the Gemara itself, mechatos sheshokal bohen mishkolos. The mechatos was used for weighing purposes. In other words, a person had a vial of mechatos, and he knew how much that weighed. He put it on a balance scale, and he put on the other side of the balance scale some unknown measure of meat. When it balances, so now he knows how much meat there is. Using Rashi's explanation, the water itself wasn't used. Nothing happened. He just put the water down. He put it on the plate of a balance scale. So the ruination is only because of his machshava, because of his thinking that when it balances with the meat, so he'll know how much meat there is. The Gemara asks, "V'omar Rava mei chatos sheshokal ben mishkolos ksheira." How can you describe the mei chatos as becoming ruined, as was suggested in the source that one who does malach with the mei chatos, so he's exempt on a on a dinei adam, but a chayav b'dinei shamayim? Why do you say it's chayav b'dinei shamayim at all? So, to tell me that the mei chatos was used in weighing something, but according to Rava, that wouldn't be an example of something that's chayav b'dinei shamayim. Rashi at the top says sheshokal b'hem mishkolo shoyu tluyin b'kaf maznayim v'yodeh mishkolo v'nosa boser l'shakloi b'kaf shniyo t'lo avar maisi b'yodo v'elo b'machshova mifsal. So the Gemara continues, lo kashya, ha begufon, ha bekenegdon. The declaration of Rava that the mechatas that was used for balancing is kosher, that's when you did it with the balance scale, like we just said. The Tanaic source that reveals that mechatas that were used in measuring is posel b'dinei shamayim. That's a case where you had a vial, and you were going to measure what we call displacement. You had a vial, and you had on the vial the receptacle holding the water notches that would resemble a measuring cup, and each level, each notch level, each rise was pre-established as defining how much meat there is. So if you put in, let's say, 1 kilo of meat, it would rise one notch, because that first notch was predetermined to displace water to that level if there's 1 kilo of meat in there, and the second notch would be 2 kilo, etc., and so forth. Rashi describes this on the third line from the top, umasnisa demashma psilos sheshokal begufan. Use the water itself. Keder hatabochim lishko boser b'mayim sheyesh lem, the way of butchers to measure meat, sheyesh lem kli sheyesh bo shinsos. Shinsos are notches. V'nosnin mayim b'rishona v'nosnin boser b'mayim ad shamayim oylim l'roishim hasheni. V'kivnuhu kvar. They already evaluated. Shebemishko litro yishnei litros hamayim oylim umagiyim l'oiso roishim. As we explain, the rise in the water to the first notch corresponded to one measure, to the second notch another measure, etc. The Gemara asks, one second, you're telling me then that with the putting of the meat directly into the vial containing the mei chatos, the waters of purification, that is not chayav in a terrestrial sense, only b'dinei shamayim. So the Gemara asks, "Begufan bo ma'isa ka'avid behu." You're doing an action in the water itself. It's not here. You're not dealing with just an intention where you simply put the water down on a plate of a balance scale and didn't do anything with the water itself. Here you did a ma'isa, an action involving the water itself. You're putting the meat into the water, causing the water to rise. If you're going to follow Chizkiyah, that unnoticeable, unrecognizable damage is considered damage, b'dinei adam nami l'chayev. He should be obligated to compensate, even in actual terms, in terrestrial terms. And now, so that with this explanation, with Rava's approach, we have reinstated a question on Chizkiyah. Elo idi v'idi b'kenegdon. So, in order to defend Chizkiyah, both examples, Rava said Shera in the weighing and the Tanaic source, which indicated disqualification, are both cases of kinegdon, on the you're putting the water down on the other side of a balance scale, not displacement. And nevertheless, for Lokashia, there's still no problem on Chizkiya. Hod Asach Daite, Hod Lo Asach Daite. Asach Daite is a situation where you stop concentrating, thinking about it, where your mind is no longer on the water. The psul in that case of the water would be a psul of Hesech Hadas. A psul, again, that's mind related. Rashi says, Masnisen the Asach Daite, the Tanaic source which indicated that he's Chayav B'dinei Shemayim, he was Meisiach Das, with regard to Mei Parah, you're supposed to have it under guard, watched. And if you were Meisiach Daite, Ni Shmi Rasan, Al Yedei HaMishkol Sheshoka Behem, while you were using it for balancing on the balance scale, so you no longer were thinking about it as Mei Chatos. V'nifsalu v'esach hadas, and that lack of concentration is called hesach hadas, and it becomes ruined. The mishmeres l'mei nidok siv, that's a quote from the pasuk. Mishmeres meaning from the word shomar, something you watch, you guard, you think about. Shetzricha shimu tamid miu, and that means it requires constant awareness. You're constantly aware of its status as being mei chatos. Now the fact that it's ruined, we say umiu b'dinei odom, as far as on a terrestrial level, lo mechayev, we're not going to hold him responsible. But the groma b'almahu, it's merely groma, it's causative, it's not direct damage. The rava that said it's kosher, but the losach, he wasn't meisiach das. He was aware the whole time that it's mei chatos. Put it on the balance scale as mei chatos, and he didn't do any maisa, any action to the water itself, and therefore the water is still kosher. Bear in mind, as we go along, that we don't have any question on Chizkiya, though. Mosiv Rav Papa, we're continuing in the Gemara. Gozal Matbea v'nifsal, Truma v'nitmes, Chometz v'avol v'pesach. A person stole. He stole a coin, and after he stole the coin, the government ruled that the coin is no longer valid. It's no longer current. A person stole some truma, and without the thief's involvement, it became tomei. It's tomei me'alel. Chometz, a person stole chometz, and Pesach went by. So after Pesach, chometz that was in existence during Pesach, owned by a Jew, becomes ruined after Pesach. You can't eat it. The thief in these cases, Omer lo harei shel cholifanecha, he says, well, here it is. Here's the item I stole. Take it back. V'i amres, if you're going to go like Chizkiya, hezek shen nikar shmei hezek, that unrecognizable damage is considered damage. Hi, Gazlinhu. This guy is an outright thief. Mamona me'alya boy shlumit. He would have to offer actual compensation, monetary compensation. Handing back that which he originally stole, he's handing back something right now that's not worth anything. Let's look at Rashi. Ve'i shmei hezek. If you're going to say like Chizkiya that hezek sheinu nikar is considered hezek, michti migzal gazle midemashche, this thief did an act of gezel when he drew the item unto himself, the kom lebri shusei, and then it became let's say in his domain, the chikom shalim le, when he pays back, dovar hanizak mishalim le v'lo kemosha gozal. He would have to pay back that which he stole, meaning the coin, for example, had a certain value, so he's got to restore the value, and the truma, that which he stole was edible truma. Now it's ruined. So that the pasuk that says veheshiv es agzela asher gozal, you shall return the item you stole, means like that which you stole. Giving back the ruined coin is now, it's in effect a damaged coin. Once again, because if you assume Chizkiyah's position that Hezek she'eno nikar shmei Hezek, it's a noticeable, it's considered an actual damage. So, with this source telling us that the thief can give back the coin as it is, worthless. The chometz as it is, the loaf that he stole, he gives back. Right now it's not worth anything. It's okay. Well, then, tufta, this would be a refutation of Chizkiyah's position. Leimo ketanoi. The Gemara here raises the possibility that the machlokes between Chizkiyah and Rabbi Yochanan, Hezek Shein and Nikar, is it considered Hezek or not, is actually a machlokes tanoim. That's what the question suggests. You'll notice there's a diamond marking that follows. Under the Mivneh heading on the side, we're going to have a Tanaic source, and we're going to try to explain the Machlokas Tanoim that we see in this Tanaic source. The first approach is going to be to suggest that the basis of the Machlokas is the issue of Hezek She'eino Nikar. Is it considered Hezek or not? So we continue in the Gemara. Leimo Ketanoi. These are the actions we've been dealing with in our previous year: defilement, mixture of truma to chulin, and the menasech of wine. Echad shogeg vechad mezid chayav divrei Rebbe Meir. Now we've dashed underlined shogeg. Rebbe Meir says that even if it's unintentional, he is obligated to compensate. Rebbe Yehuda Omer b'shogeg poter b'mezid chayav. If it was unintentional, there is exemption from payment. Only if it was intentional. My lav, the hol komifligi. What must be the underlying point of disagreement? The mor sovar, Rebbe Meir says, Hezek she'eino nikar shmei Hezek. That even when you're dealing with unrecognizable damage, it's considered regular damage. And when you're dealing with the laws of damage, no distinction is made between the unintentional and the intentional. If you break someone's windshield, you can't tell the owner, oh, I didn't mean to do so. Very nice, you didn't mean to do so. Pay anyway. Umor Savar, Rabbi Yehuda, who says for the unintentional defilement or mixing, he's exempt on an unintentional level because lo shmei hezek. Rabbi Yehuda would seem to assume the position that it's not considered damage. And why in a mezid? Why b'mezid is he chayev? That's because of a fine we impose on people that do a wrongful acts in a deliberate fashion. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. Rav Yochanan rejects this suggestion, but rather de kule alma hezek sheino nikar lo shmei hezek. And it was not like Chizkiyah. Both Tanoim, the Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, that is, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda will agree that it's not considered Hezek. The Hocha, Bekonsu Shoge Gotu Mezid Komifli. And here, the Machlokas is, do we impose a fine, treat with stringency, someone who was unintentional, so as to say serve as an additional fence in anticipation of people who do things intentionally. Rashi adds a detail. According to this analysis, after having said Hezek Sheino Nikar, according to everyone, is Lo Shmei Hezek, Rabbi Meir, who is going to obligate compensation on a shogeg level, he's really, it's a knas on a pump, embellished or added to something that already is a mere knas. A knas being a fine as opposed to an actual letter of the law requirement. We should glance at the side of the Gemara when we have a nosei topic heading, and we indicate this is a long topic, it goes till nun dalet amid beis. Konsu shogeg otu mezid. Hagemara tasok b'yishuv stiros b'shitas atanoyim b'nosei zeh. The Gemara is going to be very much involved with resolving Tanaic opinions on this matter. B'hemshech hagemara tetzateit mekoros b'inyan. As the Gemara goes on, the Gemara will cite sources involving hamavashel b'shabbos, the prohibited action of cooking on Shabbos, and hanoteal b'shvias, planting on the Shemitah year, planting fruit trees on the Shemitah year, which is also a forbidden action. Now the Gemara, after establishing a courtesy of Rav Nachman, that everyone is in agreement, that Hezek Sheino Nikar is not considered Hezek, the Machlokas then is, do we impose a knas on the shogeg in anticipation of the mezid, on the unintentional, in anticipation of those who would do things intentionally? Rabbi Meir says yes, konsu shogeg otu mezid. Umor Sava, Rabbi Yudah says lo konsu shogeg otu mezid. And now a question. Notice it's a long question. We have a semicolon in our markings. The reason for that is, on the one hand, we've finished the discussion concerning the machlokas amoroyim. On the other hand, we're continuing with the discussion concerning the tanoyim that we just mentioned. The Gemara continues. Again, we noted there's a long question. The Rami, the Rebbe Meir, Ad the Rebbe Meir. The Rami, the Rebbe Yehuda, Ad the Rebbe Yehuda. We're going to present now what appears to be contradictions within each one of these tanoyim. Desanya, hamavashel b'shabbos, b'shogeg, yochal, b'mezid, lo yochal. Divrei Rebbe Meir. One who cooks on Shabbos, if it's unintentional, he can eat it. Only if it's intentional would it be prohibited in eating. Now that's Rebbe Meir's position. What does that show us about Rebbe Meir? Does he konsu shogeg otu mezid? No. What did we say about Rebbe Meir above? Rebbe Meir, in the case of Mitamidamidamea, he's chayv on a shogeg level, because yes, konsu shogeg otu mezid. So right away you see a problem. Let's continue. Rebbe Yudah Omer, b'shogeg yoychal moisoi Shabbos, if he did it unintentionally, he is entitled to eat it, but only Saturday night. B'mezid lo yochal lo ilomis. If he did so, b'mezid, intentional cooking on Shabbos, he cannot eat the food at all, ever again. Now there's another opinion in this source. Of course we're going to read it, but we should recognize that he doesn't figure as being a central in our discussion right now. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, Omer b'shogeg yochal matzoi Shabbos lachem v'lo lo. If it was unintentional cooking, the food can be eaten on Saturday night, but only by others, not the offender himself. B'mezid, if it was cooked intentionally on Shabbos, lo ye'ochel oilomis, the food cannot be eaten, lo lo v'lo lachem. Not only to the offender, but even to others, the food has been rendered prohibited. Kashya de Rebbe Meir ad Rebbe Meir, Kashya de Rebbe Yehuda ad Rebbe Yehuda. We seem to have then a contradiction within Rebbe Meir. We already explained that, and even within Rebbe Yehuda. Prior, we had shown Rebbe Yehuda to hold shogeg potter in the case of medamea. Shogeg, if it was unintentional, we overlook it. You're exempt. And here, with regard to Shabbos, we don't allow him to eat it on Shabbos just because it was unintentional. So you see that he makes a knas. He is restrictive. The Gemara answers, and you'll notice with our markings, this squiggle underline highlights the resolution of first Rebbe Meir and a few lines later, Rebbe Yehuda. Now the Gemara. The Rebbe Meir, the Rebbe Meir lo kashya. There is no contradiction within Rebbe Meir. Ki konis. When does Rebbe Meir impose the knas, the fine, on a shogeg level? Bidrabanan. When you're dealing with a prohibition that is merely rabbinic. Something that's rabbinic needs strengthening. We have to demonstrate that even rabbinic rulings are serious. And in order to accomplish that, we say we'll fine you even b'shogeg. B'doraisa lo kanis. When it comes to something like Shabbos, which is already prohibited on a Torah level, it's prohibited to cook on Shabbos, there's no need for, let's say, further accentuating of its seriousness. Question: the ha menasech doraisa hu the kokonis. Use your arrow. We'll refer to the arrow later on. When you're looking at something like menasech, the ruination of wine as Yayinesach, if you stir wine with idolatrous intentions, of course we've discussed this in our previous shiurim, that's a Torah level prohibition, and we see that Rabbi Meir is Mechayev. We have a little star to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text, and you can see where we made reference to Menasech above, and at that point Rabbi Meir said, whether it's Shogeg or Mesid, one is Chayev. So, Menasech is Doraisa, the Kokonis, and even on a Shogeg level, you're held responsible. So, is that not a problem for this answer? The Gemara says, it's not a problem because Mishum Chumro David is Kechovim Konesle, because of the seriousness of the sin of idolatry, stirring wine for idolatrous purposes, so Rabbi Meir applies a restriction or a knas, obligation to compensate. So that you have the realm of rabbinic offenses, and the other extreme, a very serious doraisa situation, there's a knas. But your standard Torah level sin would not be, or the standard level Torah level obligation would not involve a knas on a shogeg level. Rabbi Yehuda, lo kashia. With regard to Rabbi Yehuda, likewise, there is no contradiction. Ki lo konis b'drabanan. Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to rabbinic rulings, to the opposite of Rabbi Meir's approach, when it's rabbinic, he does not impose a knas. B'doraisa konis. When it comes to a Torah level offense, he imposes a knas. The Gemara asks, v'ha menasech d'oraisa v'lo konis. When you look at the source above, we find Rabbi Yehuda on the case of menasech, which is stirring wine for idolatrous purposes, and he does not impose any payment on a shogeg level. So he doesn't impose a knas on doraisas. How can you say on doraisas he does? The Gemara says, menasech is, once again, in a realm unto itself. Mishum chumra davis l'chavim mivdal bedili minei. There's no need to impose a knas on something of an idolatrous nature, because people avoid it anyway. It's such a serious, cardinal offense. Mivdal bili, fight for havdalah. Bodal means to stay away. They stay away from it. So there's no need to impose any additional distancing factors like a knas. You'll notice a bracketed section. And use your bracket length indicator to just see how long this section is. It'll take you down about a quarter of the way down, Nun Dalet Amud Aleph. We're going to we have a bracket explanation. Notice the double starred notation in the margin. It reads Tam Hasograyim. Hagemachre Hasograyim Mevio Toshma V'Muchuvan L'Mashinema L'Fnei Hasograyim. The Gemara will cite Toshma. In other words, the Gemara will be trying to prove something, and it's directed at that which was said at this point, right before the brackets. The Rabbi Meir Bedine the Rabbonon Kones Shogeg Otumezit. So, up till this point in the Gemara, we have presented Rabbi Meir as holding that when it comes to rabbinic rulings, so he imposes a knas. He's kones shogeg otu mezid. That, you'll notice we established that with the second diamond in the upper half of this omid. The Gemara pointed out that there is a machlokas, Rabbi Meir Sovar konsu shogeg otu mezid, and Rabbi Yehuda says lo konsu shogeg otu mezid. So on that point, the Gemara will be continuing its discussion once we get to that point in the Gemara where the triangle appears on Nun Dalim Aleph. As things stand right now, that will, Amir Tzashem, be part of our next shiur, because when we get to that point, we will have already spilled over onto the next daf of the Daf Yomi schedule. Within the brackets, we continue the note on the side. Besocha Sovrayim, HaGemora, Malas, Stirois, Beshitois, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Bedine, Doraisa, Umetartzam. We're going to focus on Torah level offenses and show how Rabbi Meir seems to contradict what he has said, and likewise Rabbi Yehuda will say something seemingly contradicting what he says. Now, that having been said, we go through the bracketed section. There's a double underline marking, and on the side under the Mivneh, we note that this is Havlotas Kushios im Signon Domeh. We're highlighting questions that have a similar structure to them, similar style to them. So that the first double underline, V'romi d'Rabbi Meir ad Rabbi Meir b'doraisa. And as we mentioned before, is a contradiction within Rabbi Meir's on a Doraisa level. The Gemara, V'romi de Rabbi Meir ad Rabbi Meir b'Doraisa. Let us present what seems to be a contradiction within Rabbi Meir on a Torah level. Now, we want to point out, we have between the lines we've written in He'ora, Lefi ma shemuva b'moker habo, according to that which we're going to see in the upcoming source, gam al Rabbi Yehuda efshel ha'akshos, there is a contradiction that we can raise regarding Rabbi Yehuda, ha'gemora on nun dalet am aleph, yashev shitas Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara will deal with that on daf nun dalet am aleph. So now, we continue. Disanya hanotea b'Shabbos, one who plants on Shabbos. We're going to be contrasting planting on Shabbos with planting on the Shemitah year, on the next line. One who plants on Shabbos, b'shogeg yikayim b'mezid yakir. If he did so unwittingly, unintentionally, he can leave it, he can maintain it. If it was done with intention, so ya'akir, it must be uprooted. U'b'shvias, if one did planting on Shemitah, Shemitah is the Shemitah year, a time in which agricultural activity is proscribed, and certainly planting fruit trees would be prohibited. If one did so on Shemitah, bein b'shogeg, bein b'mezid ya'akir, divrei Rabbi Meir. Even if it's unintentional, it has to be uprooted. So whether it's unintentional or intentional, it's uprooted. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'shvias, b'shogeg yikayem b'mezid yakir, and b'shabbos, bein b'shogeg, bein b'mezid yakir. There's quite a bit of detail over here. You have Rabbi Meir's approach to Shabbos and Shvius. You have Rabbi Yehuda's approach to Shvius and Shabbos. Let's focus, though, on what the Gemara's intention in citing this source is. One who plants on Shabbos, b'shogeg, it can be maintained, and on if it's intentional, if it's shogeg means unintentional, on Shabbos it can be maintained. If it's done knowingly, it has to be uprooted. When it comes to the Shemitah, what do we see?
Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir. Now Shemitah is of course a Torah level prohibition. And you see B'shogeg on Shemitah Ya'aker. Do you notice we have a dot underlining? Do you notice we also have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text? So above, if you use the same markings, the arrow with the dot underline, he said, Bidoraisa lo kunis. Here we see Bishogeg Yalker. That would be the equivalent on our Doraisa. We are kunis. Above we said that Rebbe Meir, when it comes to Doraisa level offenses, so there's no need to impose a knas when something was done b'shogeg. Why is there no need? Because it was a Torah level matter. Here you have a Torah level matter, b'shogeg, yaker, uproot, so that it is kunis. He's imposing a punishment, if you will, a fine, by insisting that he uproots it, even though it's Doraisa. The Gemara continues, Ulitamech. According to you, who are trying to raise a problem between Rebbe Meir here and that which we explained before with regard to Rebbe Meir, Tikshaloch Higufa. This source itself is inherently contradictory. Michti, ha doraisa vaha doraisa. Shabbos is a doraisa offense, and Shvius is a doraisa offense. Maishno Shabbos u Maishno Shvius. Why, when it comes to Shabbos, do we see a leniency? He said, Bishoge Yikayim, and when it comes to Shvius, he says, Bishoge Yaker. He's stringent. Ella, Hasam Kidiktoni Taimo. This marking, the bow tie shape, are Yishuvim, are resolutions, Lashitas Rebbe Meir, and later on Rebbe Yehuda. Right now, with regard to Rebbe Meir, we're going to explain that really, we'll say in general, Rebbe Yehuda, when it comes to Doraisa, will not impose a knas. What we see here, a stringency with regard to Shvius, a stringency that will be explained now. Hasam Ela, Hasam Kidiktoni Taima. There, with regard to the source we just read with Shabbos and Shvius, we will explain that there's no contradiction within the source itself between Shabbos and Shvius, within Shitas Rebbe Meir, as the reason is taught. What's the reason that is taught? Why, when it comes to Shabbos, the planting on Shabbos, if it was done unintentionally, it can be maintained. Only if it's intentional must it be uprooted. When it comes to Shvius, even if it was done unintentionally, it has to be uprooted. So we can focus right now on whatever we're going to say with regard to Shemitah, and with that we have resolved. There's no contradiction, whether dealing with the source internally or dealing with what we mentioned above in the example of Mevasha B'Shavas B'Shogeg, where Rebbe Meir was also lenient. Omar Rebbe Meir. So we say, we're reading again, why then? Do I say b'Shabbos b'Shogeg Yikayim b'Meizi Yalker b'Shvius? Even b'Shogeg, you have to b'Shvius bein b'Shogeg bein Meizi Yalker. Mitnei, the answer is because Yisrael moinin l'Shvius. We continue at the top of Nun Dalam and Aleph v'Ein moinin l'Shabbosus. First, we translate the counting with regard to laws of fruit trees. Is a counting that will result in a focus on the Shemitah year. There is no counting with regard to trees that will end up with a focus on his having planted on Shabbos. As a result of this idea of focusing, people will get the idea that if we're not going to be stringent, people will get the idea that you can plant on a Shemitah year, so as to preempt that from arising. We say, if you were noteya on a Shemitah year, even b'shogeg, you have to uproot it. The fear that we have doesn't exist in a case of someone that happened to have planted on Shabbos. We're going to give a concrete example in a moment. Let's just finish the source. And as we read the continuation of the source, the Dovar Acher featured here, it won't be so clear. The Gemara itself asks, what do you mean by what we're going to say? Dovar Acher, Nechshedu Yisrael al HaShvius, velo Nechshedu al HaShabbosis. When it comes to Shemitah, people are suspect of violating. When it comes to Shabbos, people aren't suspect of violating. That's a bit obscure. We'll wait for the Gemara of it later. But before we deal with that, we said the reason that Rabbi Meir is so machmir, so stringent with regard to Shvius plantings, is because Yisrael Moinin L'Shvius. What does that mean? So we take a look at the Rashi, the lower part of Nun Gimel Amud Beis. Yisrael are Moinin L'Shvius means Yisrael Moinin Shnoi L'Shvius. People will count their planting years back to a Shemitah year. Orla is the prohibition of using, of benefiting from fruits during their first 3 years, the tree's first 3 years of fruit production. Revai is a reference to the fourth year, where the fruits of the fourth year of the tree are brought to Yerushalayim and treated like Meiser Sheni. Kshiyotse Me'isur Orla U'mechalu L'Noisei Berviyas. When there's a transition from the third year to the fourth year. Third year, the fruits were prohibited. Fourth year, they are brought to Yerushalayim, or Mechalalin means they can be redeemed onto money, which is brought to Yerushalayim. Haraya, when people see this transition, fourth year, he's eating the fruits in Yerushalayim, or he's Mechalal them onto money. The onlooker, he'll say, I see that he's redeeming the fruits onto money. It must be the fourth year. He'll then, in his mind, count backwards. This is year four. The year before was year three of the tree's life. Back and back. V'yodea, and he'll come to recognize Shenota B'Shvius. If we allow a Shemitah plant, a tree planted on Shemitah, to continue growing, so then 4 years later, Shemitah year being one, the next year two, etc., on the fourth year of that counting, he'll then be using the fruits. People who see that, knowing that the first 3 years the fruits were off limits, people will count backwards from that fourth year of the tree's life, discovering then that he planted during the Shemitah year. And people will come to say, planting on Shemitah is okay. How do we preempt that from arising? By saying that anything that was planted on the Shemitah year is uprooted, so you're never going to come to a fourth year scenario. Rashi on the top of Nun Dalam Aleph, V'ein Moinin Netiyosein L'Shabosis, She'ein Moinin Yomim L'Netiyah Eloshonim. When it comes to planting of trees, there's no issue of counting days. We count years. After a long time goes by, if a couple of years go by, people aren't going to realize the guy planted on a Saturday. The source that we read, and by the way, that's the reason, since people aren't going to be counting back to a planting on Shabbos, the scenario of people coming to think that planting is allowed to be done on Shabbos is never going to arise. So we can afford to be makil, to be lenient with regard to someone who planted b'shogeg on Shabbos. The source said something else. It said dover acher, that nechshedu Yisrael ha-shavias v'loy nechshedu al ha-shabosis.
The Gemara says, my dover acher, what do I need this additional point for? I get the feeling that if someone's nechshar on Shmiyah, so we have to be machmir. If he's not nechshar, he's not suspect of Shabbos, we don't have to be machmir. Okay, so what is that adding to what we wouldn't know to that which we said already? So the Gemara answers, after asking the question, my dover acher, hochi ko'omar. This is the intention. V'chitema, you might say, Shabbos nami. With regard to Shabbos also, the same kind of thinking, the same type of scenario could arise with regard to Shabbos. De zimnen de miknul yon shloishim Shabbos. De inota ha-hayuma, hu de sakale shasa, vilo lo sakale shasa. We have a principle. When it comes to counting the years of Orla, it's not necessarily three full calendar years. For example, a person can have a situation that if he plants something 30 days before Rosh Hashanah, that 30-day period is considered 1 year. How that comes to be, that's not really our topic. We'll accept that axiomatically. If he planted 29 days before Rosh Hashanah, that does not count as a year toward the Orla counting. In a case like that, so he'll have to count 3 full years. But if he was diligent and planted 30 days as opposed to 29 days, 30 days before Rosh Hashanah, let's, in our case, talk about Rosh Hashanah of the Shemitah year. Those 30 days will count as a full year. A full year toward his Orla counting. What would be if that 30-day period commenced by having planted on Shabbos? In other words, Shabbos was day one of the 30 days. So that 30-day unit of time was achieved by virtue of your having planted on Shabbos, which was 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. In a case like that, is it not so that people will actually count back in time and come to the Shabbos? Rashi, on the third line from the top, Hochi Komar, sometimes we have to count the Shabbos. We said a moment before that people don't count days when it comes to Orla matters, people count years. But Shabbos itself could be the subject of a counting. Desanya, Rashi continues, Erev Shvius Shloshim Yom Rosh Hashanah, the person planted 30 days before the new year of a Shemitah year, also lo shana l'shnei orla. Those 30 days will count as 1 year. D'shloishim yom b'shana chashuvim shana. U'mutur l'kaimon b'shvias. And in a case like that, since it was planted 30 days before the Shemitah year, we allow it to continue growing into the Shemitah year. If you planted it within 30 days before the Shemitah year, it doesn't count, and you're not even allowed to maintain those saplings. As we illustrated before, the Shabbos that you planted it could end up being the beginning of that 30-day period before Rosh Hashanah, and you're going to count that as a year. The e have a botzer yomon. If you were missing that day, lo have a solik leishos. It would not have counted as a year. Ulachar zman shoychin min aperis l'sof shtei shonim. And after a while, when after 2 full years go by, the yomrim lo mahuchu peris l'sof shtei shonim. People ask, well, it's only been 2 years, kind of like 2 years since he planted it. How is it that we're eating the fruits? And the owner will say, well, it's not just 2 years, it was 30 days also, 2 years and 30 days since I planted. 30 days before Rosh Hashanah is considered a year. So we have 3 years of credit.
Umazkirin shenota b'Shabbos, and that will arouse the memory that the planting was on Shabbos for liknesua, and we should impose a prohibition regarding Shabbos plantings as well. So now the Gemara continues. Toshma, with regard to the monin l'shabosis scenario that we just described, maybe, you know what, we're going to read this again in the Gemara. We didn't translate it sufficiently. Third line from the top, Hochi Komar. V'chitem o Shabbos Namni, with regard to Shabbos also, Zimnin demikla yom shloshim b'Shabbos, the 30-day unit will be achieved by having planted on Shabbos. De'inoto yoma hu desalka l'shosa, had he planted on that day, on that Shabbos, which was the first of the 30-day unit, prior to Rosh Hashanah of the Shemitah year, that will count as a year toward the Orla credit. V'lo, if he had not planted on that Shabbos, but rather waited a day, lo sakalei shasa, he wouldn't get a year's credit for that unit of time. It'd be only 29 days. So that Shabbos becomes a focal point as well with regard to counting for Orla purposes. So, should we not therefore be strict and say, Noteya b'Shabbos also uproot? The Gemara responds, Toshma. This is a quote from the source above. Dover acher, nechshedu Yisrael al Shavias, velo nechshedu al Shabbosis. What does that mean for us? So we look at Rashi. Toshma, dover acher, nechshedu Yisrael al Shavias, ve'iko lemechash, there is room to worry, to suspect. Mitoch shel dover nikir, since it's recognizable that the planting was on a Shemitah year, Osi l'mishri n'tia b'shvias, people will come to allow planting during Shemitah year in general. V'lo nechshedu al Shabbosis, v'afilu yizocher v'yodea dover, even if it becomes known, they recount that his planting had been on that Shabbos, starting the 30-day unit of counting. Lo osi l'mishri netiyosu b'Shabbos. People aren't going to conclude from that that planting is allowed in general on Shabbosis. That's what's meant by saying nechshedu Yisrael Shavuos. When it comes to practical fulfillment of the laws of Shemitah, people are suspect as violating, as rationalizing, as explaining away the prohibition. Not so when it comes to Shabbos. Let's continue in the Gemara. De Rabbi Yehuda, ad Rabbi Yehuda, lo kashya. Of course, you have to read in between the lines, and that's why we have this double underline, because it signifies a question that you may have raised. Is there not a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda? When it came to Mevashel b'Shabbos, cooking on Shabbos, he was machmir. He was stringent. When it came to Shemitah, he said, b'shogeg yikayim. So you have two Doraisa topics. Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda was machmir on a shogeg, even on a shogeg level. And when it came to the planting on the Shemitah, also Doraisa, b'shogeg yikayim. You can maintain it. He's not stringent. The Gemara says, lo kashya. Again, the bow tie, the resolution. There's no contradiction. But Asrei Rabbi Yehuda, chamim reluhu shvias, in the locale of Rabbi Yehuda, the Shemitah year was viewed with extreme gravity. And therefore, you don't have to worry about people coming to mezalzel, coming to treat it lightly. And to illustrate this, the Gemara says, dahu diomar leila chaveiro. There was a story in the region of Rabbi Yehuda where someone tried to insult his friend by calling him Dayar Bar Dayarta. We'll just translate it. We're not going to get into it. He says, you're a Ger Ben Gioras. You're a convert, the son of a convert. Amalei, so the person who received that remark said back, at least I don't eat Shemitah produce like you do. When we speak about eating Shemitah produce, we're talking about Shemitah produce that was, let's say, was cultivated on Shemitah year, that was gardened, that wasn't hefker, where you have a prohibitions with regard to Shemitah. Just to paraphrase what was said, at least I'm not a Shvius violator like you are. So you see that in Rebuta's realm, the ultimate insult was considering someone a Shvius violator, indicating that that's a place that people would treat Shmias with great seriousness, and someone who was going to treat Shemitah lightly, violate it, was considered very low in the eyes of the public. So that Rebbe Yehuda might very well take the position of being Kones, Shogeg, Otu Mezid when it comes to Doraisa level offenses. But when it comes to Shemitah, there's no need to impose any stringency. We mentioned before, we'll just mention as a lead into the next year, we have a triangle which on the side indicates a kushios mi makoros, questions from sources shemalamdin shrevi meir b'derabonon lo kone shogegotu meizid b'nigud l'masha amarnu liel shekines in rabonon violations shogegotu meizid. It's Hashem in our next year, so we'll pick up from this point without too much introduction. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.